Hello, friends. Grab a beer or six and turn up the radio. You're listening to Blame It on Buffett.
Well, I sailed from Lauderdale down to Key Largo. Crossed the Gulf on a fast sloop and I sailed the Abacos. As a kid, I read Contiki and now all the pirate books too. There's just so many places on my list to see. I'm going crazy just trying to choose.
This week on Blame It on Buffett, we have our guests Eric and Gina Babin from Radio Trop Rock. It was lovely to get them on the podcast to talk a little bit about the other side of music, you know, from coming from owning the radio station and running that, as opposed to, we've had a lot of musicians on the podcast, but, you know, these guys are more, collectors, curators, connoisseurs of trop rock music, and they are putting it together, putting it out there for you to listen to. So yeah, it was really great to have them on. I believe I am also, they did a little interview with me as well. So I think I'm going to be on Radio Trop Rock at some point, which I'm really excited about. Thanks again to them for doing that. I was not expecting it, but yeah, that was super exciting for me to be on the other side of the interview a little bit. So yeah, I think we'll just get into the interview now, and I hope you enjoy it. All right. I am excited. Today I'm here with Eric and Gina Babin from Radio Trop Rock. Thank you so much for being on, you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We are excited to be part of this great podcast. What you got going on, we love, and I'm excited about what you're going to be doing for us in the future as far as the Trop Rock and Jimmy Buffett community.
Thanks. Yeah, that's kind of what I'm hoping to bring something to, is just maybe introducing a few people that might not know about this kind of thing to the music and to what we got going on, because it's a pretty good time. But I will say that Radio Trop Rock is such a good way to, like, I myself am discovering new musicians all the time just by listening to you guys. So it's really exciting. Like, I feel like, especially when you see house concerts that come through your area, or, you know certain musicians, it can be kind of regional. Like, I know our sort of West Coast musicians pretty well, and a few of the other musicians that have come or that I've seen at like Meeting of the Minds, but there are so many musicians out there that really sort of fall into the trop rock or, you know, coastal Americana or whatever you want to call it genre, that it's really exciting to find new people. How do you go about, like, choosing who's going to be on the radio?
Well, on Radio Trop Rock, we call every one of our listeners an assistant program director. And if anyone knows the radio business, the program director is the one that decides what goes on the air. And so with our listeners all being assistant program directors, we encourage input from them. So not a week goes by where somebody will recommend someone that we have never heard of, and we're like, and then we listen to it, and we are very specific, or what word am I looking for?
Particular.
We're particular about what we put on the air, because, you know, we wanted to make sure that it is produced well, it's written well, you know, it just the whole package, because we're all about quality. So we'll check that song out, and, you know, and then next thing you know, whoever, you know, somebody recommended a song, an artist, and we're like, yes, and we pick them up and we contact the artist and get some music. And so that is how we find probably the majority of it. Then there's a slight majority, well, I guess slight majority in the word, a minority of it is that where artists will send us the music that want to be part of the community, or maybe they're already being played on another station. And so that's, we get a little bit of music that way.
That's pretty cool. So when artists send you the music, their music, like, have you ever had to, like, if you try to think how to phrase this, like, if you don't want to play it, like, is that a hard position to be in? If you have to say, like, oh no, that doesn't really fit our, you know, what we have going on here? Or do you usually, do most of the people that send you music end up being on?
That is a very difficult decision to make, because a lot of the music we get are people that we may already know and we're friends with and drink with, hang out with, see at these events. But once again, you know, we only play about 10% of what is submitted to us.
Oh, wow. That is much lower than I would have expected.
It is very difficult, you know, and the first thing I do immediately, you know, I may not see it for a day or two, but as soon as I do, I reply back, hey, you know, thank you for the submission. We'll review that for airplay. And then we'll check it out and then decide if it goes on the air or not. And sometimes the musician or whoever will say, well, give me your honest feedback. And we will do that. You know, sometimes, for example, I don't remember who it was, but they sent me something. They give me your honest opinion. I'm like, it's well written, but it sounds like a demo. It's really not produced well enough for radio yet. And they go, thank you for your honest input. I agree. And I'm like, well, that's good that they agreed with me. I don't feel so bad, you know?
Yeah, I guess also if you're going to be in the music business, you know, you have to, I mean, that's a part of it, right? Is not everyone is going to be into your music or think your music is up to a certain level. You're going to get, you know, no's from gigs and from other things. So I guess it's probably not that big of a blow. I'm sure anyone that's trying to do that and you know, be in the music business is getting that kind of thing in lots of situations. I have a couple questions from listeners or from people that were interested in asking you questions.
Okay.
And I was going to put them at the end, but this one fits in really well, I think, with what we're talking about. So if that's okay with you, I'm just going to ask one of them right now.
Yeah, sure.
So Michael Fitzgerald asked, wanted to know how online broadcast works. So when you do get songs or you do accept submissions, do you pay the artist to play their songs, or like how does the radio of it all work?
We never charge the artist to play their music ever. And we feel like it's just they're trying to get their music out. We want to help them, and that's been the whole thing of Radio Trop Rock.
Right. But I think part of the question was, do we pay the artist? We actually indirectly do, because we are licensed through Sound Exchange, which takes care of our internet, the BMI, ASCAP, CSAC, and everything. So we do pay a monthly fee based on listenership and the songs we play. We submit a monthly report, and that report goes to them, and they send us back a bill that tells us how much we owe them, and then they disperse the money to the artist. If I could find a legal way to just hand the artist the money directly, I would, because I suspect too large of a portion goes to some people sitting in ivory towers in Nashville, and rather than the people on the street writing and performing the music. And I wish we could do it that way, but unfortunately, that's not how the business works.
Yeah, it has to go through that sort of middleman situation. You never know like what's going on there exactly, but I'm sure the artists are happy to get you know, anything they can from their playtime on the radio. I mean, like Gina said, I'm not one, but if I was one, I'd probably be happy just to be getting the airtime and, you know, not necessarily even making any money. So I am sure that
well,
whatever,
you know, they say, you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, the artists, they're getting promotion. They are getting like, hey, come play it at my restaurant and at least you're going to get some exposure. Well, we want the artists to get paid. So if, you know, if we got to be licensed, that's great that they're, you know, we have listeners that hear their music and hopefully are buying it. But certainly they deserve to get paid and we want to make sure they do. And any way we can make that happen, we try and do.
I guess I didn't really think about it. You're right. I would never expect them to play like a gig without getting paid. So, you know, I guess you shouldn't expect to play their music in any way without them getting paid. So.
Some of the places that will think, well, I have, you know, 75 people that come into my restaurant during dinner. That's 75 people you're going to be exposed to. Well, yeah, why don't you come to my house and cook dinner and I'll have 75 people over.
And we'll eat it.
And maybe they'll go to your restaurant tomorrow, you know?
Yeah, no, I definitely would never think, even in like a restaurant or something, that exposure is like good enough. Like definitely we want to get the artists paid. And I know that a lot of them are having a tough time right now because they are not able to play gigs as, you know, the same as before because of the situation that we're all in and staying home and whatnot. So I know a lot of them are struggling a little bit, but have been doing a lot of virtual concerts, which is kind of exciting because it's sort of a different way because we can't leave our house to be able to see them. And I know, you know, like you, I know you're very a strong proponent of, you know, it's great to like give the money to charity and stuff too, but like you want to make sure that you're tipping the musicians when they're doing. I think it's probably pretty easy to end up watching something on Facebook for an hour, you know, and just not, because you're not in the room with them, not think actively about, oh, I should probably tip them. But that's really important too, right? For these online shows.
Absolutely. I mean, we totally understand because, you know, when this first happened, we didn't know this was going to be going on for 6 weeks or 8 weeks or longer. And so, you know, everybody was being generous at the beginning to the artists and donating. But then we get it because we were doing the same thing. You can't afford to be donating, you know, 60, 70 bucks a week and then more. And then for 8 weeks, you know, the first week it's easy, you know, so still enjoy the show. But even if you can only donate $5, do that. Because if, you know, let's say, 500 people watch that show, that's, you know, $2,500. And of course, that would be fantastic. But the problem is, you know, only a few people donate. You don't feel like you have to donate $20 or more, just $5, just something.
Yeah. I think, like you said, the early on, I was donating like $20. And then after, you know, a few shows, I was like, okay, I probably can't really afford to be donating $20 every time. But yeah, even if you just donate, you know, a couple dollars or $5 or something, that really goes a long way for the musicians and for the position they're in. Because like really a lot of them that, you know, spend a lot of time touring and playing gigs, that's, you know, that's their main source of income and they basically can't do it right now. So I appreciate that you're out there, you know, spreading the good word of like, don't forget to tip your artists. It's really important for them because that's a cause also close to my heart is I love all of these guys and ladies. And I know a good number of them personally. I'm sure not as many as you know personally, but the ones that I've met, you know, are all lovely people. And I want to make sure that we can continue to support them as much as possible.
Right. And this may be a good time. Let me give a plug to the Trop Rock Music Association Artist Relief Foundation. The TRMA, Trop Rock Music Association, had intended to start some sort of foundation to help the artists in 2021. And then this happened. So Mark Friedman, the president, got his, because he's an accountant and all that stuff. So he rushed through a thing to get a 501c3 or something. I guess that's what it's called. I don't know. I'm not an accountant. But it's a separate fund that's called now the Trop Rock Music Association Artist Foundation. And so that foundation is separate from TRMA. And the reason it needs to be separate is because that is strictly for donations to those that apply when there are hardships. And so, unfortunately, this COVID-19 thing happened. And so a lot of people are feeling generous and donating. So the good part about that is this foundation is can continue forward and now has a base, so to speak, of a bank account. So let's say hopefully this thing passes soon and 6 months from now, somebody, whatever, hurts their hand and can't perform. And so they need some help. The foundation will be there to help them at that time. So I encourage folks to check it out, troprock.org. And that's if you don't know where to donate and you want to help artists, that is the place to go to do that. One of the places.
So that's any money that goes in there gets distributed directly to Trop Rock artists that apply for it. Is that how it works?
That is correct. 100% of that account is distributed to the Trop Rock artists. But once again, as I mentioned, you know, we have a reserve in that account because so many people donated and we only had, I don't know the exact number, but there's money left in the account. And the reason is because a lot of the Trop Rock musicians have day jobs, other jobs that are not related to music. So they're still able. And those are they're not applying. And they understand that. It's the ones that 100% of their income comes from music. 100% of their income has gone to zero over the past 6 weeks. So those are the ones applying. And there's luckily very few of those.
So there's money in reserve.
What?
There's money in reserve for later on for anything that happens.
Right.
Right. So like you said, this is going to be an ongoing foundation that in other situations where other things might happen, where the musicians need to apply, they can do that. It's not just for the COVID COVID-19 correct. Situation.
And with that said, I want to encourage any musician that didn't know about this to apply. Go to troprock.org and you'll see the application procedures.
Okay, great. So that is, does that get promoted on the radio station as well? Or like, will people hear about it in other places than just, cause I mean, you know, this podcast doesn't have like, you know, hundreds of listeners or anything.
I can speak for Radio Trop Rock that we do promote that via a public service announcement. And I will tell you that it has been sent to the other stations and they were receptive to it, but I don't listen to them. So I just assume they're playing it.
Okay. Well, that's great. I mean, I love that this foundation was set up. I think it's really important, especially right now, but going forward to have that for anything that might happen. I know like PHIP has their foundation for clubs. If anything happens, like in clubs need to apply for assistance. Right. So this is, I really like that there's something specific for the musicians if they need to apply. I want to circle back just a little bit because I've sort of jumped ahead. But so you guys are the owners of Radio Trop Rock, but you didn't start it, right? Is that you, someone else started it and then you've taken over.
That is correct. It was started actually as an AM station in Panama City, Florida, maybe 6 years ago now, by Stephen Youngblood. And the AM station decided, because he started it, but the AM station was also co-owned by someone else. And so the AM station decided to go a different route. And so he goes, well, can I take control of the online Radio Trop Rock? And they go, yes, you can have that. And we're taking the AM station and changing it to something else, whatever. And so he took that and he had it for a little bit, but has, you know, a daytime job and is very busy. So he sold it to Todd Sparks, part of GSE, I think that's Gulf State Entertainment or something like that, in Panama City. And he had it about a year, but once again, he has an entertainment business that does weddings and all kinds of DJ services, live music, and corporate events. They're really busy. So he felt he wasn't giving it the amount of time that it deserved. And so it became available when just around the time I was about to retire from the Navy, and I was looking for something to do where we could travel to all these events and kind of have it as a tax write-off and also promote in a way. And so that's when we bought it. It was December 23rd of 2016 is when we purchased it. And then we had to revamp everything, the app, the everything. And so we kind of kicked it off around March 1st of 2017.
Actually, it was in February.
Late February.
Because we did our first live broadcast was Lone Star Luau in Marble Falls.
Oh, that's correct.
Texas.
So. Lone Star Luau 1, which was in February of 2017, was our first live broadcast on Radio Trop Rock. And they had never done a live broadcast, any of the previous owners. So this was the first live broadcast ever on the station.
That's interesting because I wanted to ask you about doing live shows. So like this podcast, obviously we're recording ahead of time, but your show that you do, Trop Rockin' in the USA, that's a live show, right? You do that just when like on air. So how is that, like, how do you prepare for that? Or like what makes that different than, you know, doing just a pre-recorded thing that you can go back and edit?
Well, I can tell you it's a lot more stressful. Because when you know you're about to go live and you've tested everything, and then right before you go live, something bad happens, and it is very stressful. But the way for that show, we do it each Tuesday night live, and it's going to switch back to our normal time. We're doing it Tuesday night now because I'm going to a school here that we can't do it at our normal time, which is noon central on Wednesday. And so we replayed at noon central on Wednesday, but we'll go back to the live thing next month. But the way we prepare, we just come up with a theme. Normally it's brought to you by one of our sponsors, an event or whatever. And so we kind of build the playlist around that sponsor in some way. And then we have some things we want to make sure we mention, but we try and do it as unscripted as possible because people seem to appreciate the fact that we kind of joke around with each other. And then someone will text something during the live show and we'll talk about that. And so we prepare and make a general outline, but we don't totally script the show because we find that works better for us.
Yeah, I prefer that too. I mean, that's kind of how I do this podcast is, you know, just whatever happens kind of happens. I honestly don't even really edit it that much. I'm trying to think if I've even really edited anything out. I mean, nothing horrible has happened yet. So,
but well, better not cut, huh? Then you'd have to edit.
I know I'm fine with it. I don't know. I guess I haven't really taken a stand either way, but I'm not that worried about it. I think the listeners can appreciate that sort of, you know, free flowing. Like, even if something kind of happens, if it's live, I think there's people have more allowance for that where it's like, oh, like it's live and this crazy thing happened, you know? I think people sort of expect that when they know that it's just like, oh, we're listening to you right now, you know, and you can't do anything about it. So whatever's going to happen is going to happen. And I know for me, honestly, that makes me more interested in watching things or listening to things. Like when the musicians are doing their virtual shows, I really love watching them live when they're playing, you know, like, oh, they're on Facebook right now doing it live. Sometimes I'll go back and watch shows when they're not live, but it's kind of like, if I don't catch it live, I don't always like think to go back and watch it. I think there's just like something special about inner, like feeling like you're there, like this thing is happening right now. And you're, even though you're not interacting with it in a way, it's kind of like, there's something extra special about listening to that, that I think people enjoy. I know I do. So I think that's really cool that you guys have that live show. And that's one of the sort of, when you said you like to travel around, that's kind of one of the ways people can know where you are, right? Because the live show comes at you from different places a lot of the times.
Yeah, it normally does come from different places. We're here in Florida for 10 weeks, so it's very rare that we would have 10 shows in a row from the same location. Normally, it's 2 weeks here, a week there, and a week there. And there are times when we have to stop at like a rest stop or a Walmart parking lot or whatever, or a casino and just stop in the parking lot, you know, and get everything cranked up and do the show and then move on to the next place we're going.
So you're like, here we are from this casino parking lot, or
right. Yes.
Exactly.
See, people, I think people appreciate that, you know, they're on the adventure with you, like whether it's at an event or a casino parking lot, they're like, oh, we feel like we're in the RV with you or wherever you are. So I think that's a really cool way to do a show. I also wanted to talk about Gina, your show 4 at 4, because I know I also have a lot of favorites that change frequently, and, or like I'll circle back and be like, oh, I'm really loving this song today, or I'm really loving this song. How do you go about choosing what songs you're going to have on your show?
Well, usually I start off like at the beginning of the week and he'll go, okay, I need your list. I'm like, well, I don't know what I'm going to play yet. So I just kind of go through my own stuff and I look at what other people are posting about. And it's been really easy with these live shows too, you know, where I'm like, oh, I didn't know he sang that song. Cause this last week I picked a brand new song from Eric Erdman because it really moved me. Cause I was like, this is a great song and it's so, you know, what is going on right now kind of thing. But I love reggae. So I usually will go back to my, you know, main playlist that I have on my phone and go, oh yeah, that song. I love that song. And nobody really ever sends me anything. So it's all me, you know, whatever I picked. And yeah, well, sometimes we'll influence or go, I don't think that really fits. And I'm like, it's my show. So, you know, we do kind of disagree some, especially when I wanted to play Ozzy Osbourne. He was like, I don't have on my board. Well, and I'm like, well, it's my week. It's my show.
And she also played in art. The first week we bought the station, I made a thing, and I forget even what was going on in December of 2016, but Sam Hunt had a country song out that was, in my opinion, was not country and was way against the type of stuff I like. So I said, you know, we just bought this radio station and I give you my word, we will never, ever, 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 as long as we own the station, play Sam Hunt. Like, I don't know, about a month ago, she goes, I'm going to play a Sam Hunt song. I'm like, oh, no, you ain't. And she goes, all right, guess what happened? She played a Sam Hunt song.
All right.
Well, it's her show, so I guess she can do what she wants.
Yeah, that's what she said. She overruled me. I'm like, well, I produced the show. I'm going to stick something else in there. And she's like, no, you're not.
Well, it's good, you know, because it's like, then I finally get a voice, you know, what exactly I like too, And it's not always, you know, so scripted, like you say, because people kind of like just kind of off the cuff stuff, because it is basically how I feel that week. Because, you know, sometimes, I mean, especially during the COVID, because I spent a lot of time here by myself because I'm more social than being sitting here all the time. So, you know, noticing like the last couple of weeks, I need to really kind of pep up my life or something, because I'm playing a lot of stuff that's very reflective, you know, from what's going on right now. And I really need to kind of get back to the beach, I guess.
Well, I don't know. I really like, so I got off work early yesterday. So I was able to catch the show, and I really liked, so like Sublime, you played a Sublime song, and I love Sublime, and I didn't really expect that at all, right? Like that's not something that I would really necessarily expect, even though, like you said, a lot of Sublime has kind of like that reggae. It's not something that I would necessarily expect to hear on like a trop rock station a lot or anything. So I was like, oh yeah, Sublime. So I think, you know, throwing in a few of those songs that like maybe aren't the normal thing people are going to hear, or maybe don't quite necessarily fit like the radio trop rock, you know, usual thing, I think can be really exciting, because people, you know, you're not playing that all the time, but if you're picking one or two songs, you know, that are going to resonate with people are going to be like, yeah, like this song, I haven't heard that song in a while, you know? So I was pretty excited about that.
Well, I didn't know that Sublime did so much reggae either. So that was kind of shocking, because that's kind of when I was growing up, was with Sublime. And so I'm like, I never really paid attention to them until I started doing my show. And I think I played a couple of theirs where I'm like, wow, I didn't even know that was them.
Yeah, it definitely takes me back to when I was like, I listened to Sublime a lot when I was younger. And so, yeah, I was really excited. But also the Eric Erdmann song, I think I had watched that, the online show that he had done where he played that, the one with his mom, right?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, that is a really amazing song. And I love Eric Erdmann, and I love all his music. He does the Fresh Song Fridays. Is that what it's called? Or New Music Friday?
Yeah Fresh really Song Friday. And we actually play his Fresh Song Friday. We do it every Friday at 9 a.m. But of course, he also, the primary means to hear it is on his YouTube channel. But yeah, I think he's at about 65. I mean, Eric Erdmann is just so talented. We saw him two or three Easters ago. And he played, and I'm not exaggerating, he played a 4-hour show, him and just his guitar, and took one break for about 3 minutes to use the bathroom. The entire rest of that, he played original music. So he played like 3 hours, and he wasn't telling 30-minute, like he wasn't doing a Jim Hayne where he's telling 30-minute stories about a 3-minute song. He'd tell a 30-second story about a 3-minute song. I could not believe he knew that. He didn't use an iPad or anything for lyrics. He's a genius.
Yeah, that's amazing. I honestly like can't remember a song like 30 seconds after I've learned it. Like to be able to know and retain like that many songs without like having to look at anything is just, that is crazy to me. But it's very, very impressive. And I think I saw him for the first time at Meeting of the Minds, the first time I went to Meeting of the Minds, which was, I don't know, like 4 or 5 years ago now. And he isn't really like trop rock, but he just fits right in because he's just, you know, an amazing songwriter. He's just such a nice guy. And yeah, it's interesting to see how musicians sort of end up in the trop rock sphere, even though you wouldn't necessarily like listen to their music and be like, oh, this is, you know, quote unquote trop rock music. So do you, when you're picking music for the station, do you sort of, you know, you don't keep it really tight to like, oh, this has to fall in a certain musical genre? It's more about...
I see where you're going with that. Actually, we have a very liberal definition of trop rock, but it might be more exclusive than you think. If the song is about beaches, bars, or boats, then we're probably going to play it as long as it meets the criteria of being well-written, well-produced, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. However, here's where we kind of get outside the box of that. If it is an artist that is popular within the trop rock community, Drop Dead Dangerous, High South, Eric Erdman, and it's high quality stuff, very talented people, High South, Eric Erdman, Drop Dead Dangerous, and that type of stuff, we will play some of their stuff. We try not to play their whole catalog because that would be too much. But if it's someone that meets that, the first thing I do is I do look at their entire catalog and I try and find something. Just please have a song that says the word sand in it somewhere. You know? And so like Eric Erdman's Build the Bridge or Burn the Bridges.
Yeah.
And so that's about being on a tropical island and you burn the bridge because you don't want to go back to the mainland. That was the first one of his that we played. And so, and then as he gained popularity within the community, the trop rock community, we had more leeway to play some of his other stuff. So that's how we get those folks into it.
So it's sort of like if they have already played some live shows and sort of gotten a foothold in the community, as, you know, musicians that are performing at events and that kind of thing, then you're like, okay, the trop rock community already knows who these people are. So we're going to sort of, there's a little more leeway there because they've already been kind of accepted into like trop rock, even though they might not necessarily be trop rock in the sense of like all their songs about the beach or whatever.
Well, plus, you know, you'll have people reach out and request it because they've heard it over and over at these events and stuff like that too. So there again, you know, we're having our, you know, the base of all of our people that are listening are going, I really want to hear Two Rights Don't Make a Wrong. Now, it's not a trop rock song, but I want to hear it.
That's so the assistant program directors, once again, when they chime in, we listen.
Yeah, that's, I think that's smart because, you know, you have, if people are listening to your radio station, you want to, I mean, not that you should necessarily bow to everything they want, but definitely want to factor in their input. I have had a few suggestions for like guests and stuff on the podcast, and I always try and make those happen if I can, because if people are excited to hear something, then yeah, I want to make that happen for them if it's possible. So,
yeah, right.
But, you know, so
there have been times when people recommended us, we play something or request something, and it's just something that doesn't fit our format or our restrictions on the songwriting and production and all that. And we don't play it. I mean, you know, now if I had 100 people request it, then I don't know, maybe I'd play it one time or something, but yeah. So there's that.
Just like the
have a special show.
Yeah. The Sam Hunt thing.
The Sam Hunt thing or Bruce Springsteen.
Oh yes. Bruce Springsteen, apparently, that was another one of this must be like an inside joke question because it seems very pointed, but John Burns wanted to know, which American institution does Eric hate more, Bruce Springsteen or baseball?
Well, see, that's a tough decision because I hate them. No, but I don't hate either one. And same thing with Wagon Wheel is a big joke for us, you know, because we don't play Wagon Wheel. And this has happened at a show, Island Fever Showcase. A band was played Wagon Wheel, and we cut to a commercial because it's a joke. We don't hate Wagon Wheel. We don't hate baseball. We don't hate Bruce Springsteen. It's just... We you know, we kind of joke and then we lock on to that joke. So maybe if someone's at an event and they're playing Wagon Wheel, and this happens a lot, people, we're not even there, and somebody says something about us, and I'll get a video, hey, they played Wagon Wheel for you or whatever.
Well, you tell me you hated Wagon Wheel.
And what to answer John Burns' question, I don't hate either one. It's we just joke about it. It's a funny joke and it is an inside joke, but we play with it on social media just kind of because people think it's funny. But for Wagon Wheel, we were doing house concerts when we lived in Gulf Shores, Alabama. And I don't know, somebody posted something on Facebook about Wagon Wheel free for 372 days at a bar or something. I thought that was funny. So we had a sign made up that the artist, only the artist could see as they're playing out. They'd be like under our house. We had a house on pylons. And the back of the house was a beach. And so the audience would sit on the beach and the artist would be looking out and above them where only they could see. It was a sign that said, no Wagon Wheel. If played, contract is voided and you will not receive pay. So that became a big joke with the artist also. So, I don't know. We're just having fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's one of those things that happens a lot where, you know, you express hatred, I'm doing air quotes right now, for something, or you joke about hating something and then like it catches on and then everybody is like, hey, you hate that thing and it's hilarious. And then it just becomes your thing. Like, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but like Kathy Pfister hates Stevie Nicks. And I'm sure she actually doesn't really like Stevie Nicks very much, but I think it's more just become this huge thing that like everyone knows that she hates Stevie Nicks. So people will just like send her Stevie Nicks stuff or like tag her in Stevie Nicks related stuff.
And that's like my Beach Boys hatred. I'm not a Beach Boys fan at all.
Greg Dumas loves the Beach Boys. Greg is the DJ for the Happy Hour 2.0 show on Fridays. And so he loves the Beach Boys. So he'll of course sneak that in. But we still play Beach Boys on the station. And so Greg will hit me up. Oh, Beach Boys are playing. Thank you. Don't let Gina hear it or whatever.
Yeah, it just like becomes a thing. But then, yeah, it's your thing. So you embrace it and you joke about it. And people, it's like a way for people to interact and relate with you. Like, oh, I know you hate this thing and it's funny. So I think like everybody kind of has stuff like that a little bit.
I have a funny story about that same wagon wheel thing where I went to a commercial. I think it was a Compass Rose band. I'm not sure. But they asked me after the show, they're like, do you record everything? I'm like, yes, I record everything. And I may not use it later, but I archive it just in case I need it later to promote the event for the next year or whatever. And they go, can you send me that? And I go, well, yeah, it's your music. You know, you own it. So I'm going to send it to you. But I have one thing to tell you. When you played Wagon Wheel, I went to a commercial. And he was like, what? I'm like, it's a thing. It's a thing. He's like, okay.
You're like, it's not on you. It's not because of you. It's just an inside thing. Right. I wanted to ask you, so you mentioned, you know, you retired from the Navy and then needed something to do. So you got into this, but were you already a big trop rock fan? Like, how did you get into that, the world of trop rock, and, you know, why did that become a thing that you were interested in doing?
Well, it actually started my first tour in the Navy. I joined the Navy in 91 and I wasn't a Buffett fan at that time. But my first tour in the Navy, I was lucky enough, the entire 2 years, our ship was doing counter drug operations in the Caribbean. So we were going to Puerto Rico, Cuba, Bonaire, Aruba, Curacao, Key West, the Bahamas. And so every day at lunch, we would take a 2-hour lunch. Oh, don't tell the taxpayers, but we would take a 2-hour lunch and just hang out on the fantail, the back of the ship, and just watch the blue water go by and lay out and get a tan and all that. And a friend of mine handed me a Jimmy Buffett cassette, Feeding Frenzy. And he goes, because I always had a Sony Walkman. Yeah, that's how long ago it was. Sony Walkman in my ears. And he was like, check this out. And I was listening to that. I'm like, holy crap, this fits this perfect. And then we were in Key West and I went into Margaritaville, the gift shop there. And I was like, what is this parody thing? I don't understand what that is. I asked the cashier and she told me about it. And I'm like, that's kind of cool. And so I started to get into Jimmy Buffett at that point because it just so matched everything we were experiencing in the tropics. And it was just fun stuff. And I, you know, who doesn't like to have fun? And so that's kind of how I got into Jimmy Buffett, which led us to being stationed in California about 5 years after that. And me and Gina had gotten married during that 5 years. And that's a whole different story. But so we were stationed in San Diego. And at that point, you know, we're huge Jimmy Buffett fans. We joined the San Diego Parrot Head Club. We're having a great time. And we start going to these weekly Parrot Head events at the galley at the marina in Chula Vista. And there's this band playing called Coco Loco. And it's fronted by Jerry Gontang, who is still, if you know, well, you're a West Coaster, you know Jerry.
Yeah,
So I'm like, there's more to this than just Jimmy Buffett? What? And so that's kind of how we went on a cruise with Jerry called Music and Margaritas. And so that's how we got into trop rock was obviously through Jimmy Buffett first. Like, who doesn't do that and who wouldn't? And then when you realize that there's people out there that play
like-minded people
that play that type of music, that's amazing. And we went to, because we're from Texas, we ended up going to Riddles in the Sand. I think it was her second year. And Sonny Jim was there, Saint Somewhere. Jim Hain was playing that one. And that was just, we were like, this is us. We're going to be part of this forever. So that's how we got into it.
And Gina, were you a Jimmy Buffett fan before, or did Eric like bring it home from the Navy and be like, hey, this guy?
Well, we met through the mail. And so when he was kind of, you know, courting me or whatever, he sent me a mixtape, which happened to be Jimmy Buffett. And so when I got that, I started listening to it. I'm like, oh, I really like this music. And he's like, but wait, there's more. So that's kind of how I got into trop rock. And it was strictly because of him, because I'd never heard of Jimmy Buffett. My parents never listened to Jimmy Buffett. They were all about, you know, George Jones and all the old country stuff. But, you know, he's the one who brought me Jimmy. So that's how he got me interested. So.
Wait, you met through the mail?
Yeah.
I need to hear more about that story.
Well, he was stationed in Japan at the time. And I was living in Texas, and they had a thing called overseas sales for cars. And so he had written into the company that I worked for, and a girlfriend at the time had her insurance through our agency. And so he had written in for insurance quotes, and that was back when you had to write a letter, wait 14 days, get a response. There was no internet at that point. And so he had sent in a request for insurance on different cars. And so we kind of corresponded for almost a year.
It was a year. Yeah.
Yeah. And he said, well, I'll come in and I'll take you to lunch for all your help. Well, we ended up going to dinner because it ended up being he came into town to do something.
Well, I figured because I really hadn't seen her. So I was like, well, lunch is a safe bet. You know, I'll just take her to lunch. You know, dinner, that's a date. Lunch is a thank you.
Right. So we went to dinner, and 101 days later, we got married. And we actually got married in San Diego. So because he had already done his, I guess, your R&R stuff in Texas, because his family lived in North Texas and we were in the Dallas area. And so he brought me out to California. We were drinking margaritas in Tijuana, Mexico.
This
and he asked
true,
to marry
this is a true. We were drinking 99-cent margaritas in Tijuana. And I told her, it was about 3:30 in the afternoon. And I told her, let's take the trolley back. If we get to the courthouse before they close, let's get married. How romantic is that? So at like 4:55, we're at the second floor of the San Diego County Courthouse, looking over San Diego Bay, getting married with some stranger clerk as our witness.
Yeah.
I mean, margaritas can make almost anything romantic, so right. I believe it.
Yeah. He had it all planned ahead of time, but he still denies it even after all these years.
Huh. I love that. It's such a fun story. I love when people have really interesting stories about how they met, and that is definitely a unique one for sure. So I'm sure you guys have probably told that story a million times, but hopefully there's maybe somebody listening to this that hasn't heard it before. I know I hadn't. So
we really don't tell that story very often. I think there's probably a handful of people that actually know. They just assume we met while he was in the Navy or went to high school together.
But you think about this, let's say like I retired from the Navy as a senior chief. So I had a junior sailors under me, and I guarantee you, if some sailor came to me and he said, hey, I'm thinking of getting married to this girl I just met through the mail, and we've known 100. No, that's stupid. That will never work out. And here we are 24 years later.
Yeah, it seems to have gone all right.
Yeah, exactly. Thing for my mom if I wasn't at the wedding.
Oh, yeah.
That could be an issue.
Yeah.
Well, just even from just that story, it sounds like you guys have traveled to a ton of different places. Do you have a favorite place that you like to go or favorite trip that you've taken?
Yes. Joe's Van Dyke is my favorite place in the whole entire world. Yes.
I definitely also love Joe's Van Dyke. And I like that you pronounce it with the hard J, because I think that that's the best way to pronounce it.
Well, I'm never sure, because he'll correct me on my pronunciation, because I say Caribbean. You know,
is it Caribbean or Caribbean? Yeah. Well, I mean, it's one of those things, if you try and pronounce something the correct way and you're slightly off, people they'll say, oh, well, they're being arrogant. You know, I'd rather them say, oh, that dumbass doesn't even know, you know, rather than say, oh, they're trying to be arrogant and try and pronounce it the right way. And they still got it wrong.
Yeah. I think with Caribbean, for me with Caribbean, if I'm just saying like, oh, I was in the Caribbean, then I say Caribbean. If I'm like watching Pirates of the Caribbean, then I say Caribbean. Yeah. Right. So like, I think it depends on the context of, you know, the sentence that you're using it in, for me anyway. And for Joseph Van Dyke, when I was there, I was like, I'm going to get to the bottom of this. So I like asked locals and I asked a guy and I was like, so is it Joseph Van Dyke or Joseph Van Dyke? And he was like, either one is fine. I was just like, no, but like, what do you say? And he was like, I usually say Joseph Van Dyke. And I was like, great. That's what I'm going to say.
Well, how does King Chesney pronounce it? That's probably, you know, I don't
I think it just, it's, I don't know. It's more satisfying with the hard J, I feel like. Joost Van Dyke is, I don't know. I just don't like it as much. So when he was like, yeah, I say Joost Van Dyke.
Place. I want to be there.
Well, when I was going to boot camp in San Diego, and during, you know, you of course you're stuck there, and then you finally get, after the 8 weeks, your first weekend off. And I was like, oh, 8 weeks. I have never been to Southern California except for boot camp. I'm going to La Jolla. And then I learned quickly that's not how it's pronounced.
Yeah, people will laugh at you.
I think there's the reverse problem too, where if you grow up in an area or a situation where the double L is pronounced more like a Y, then you think it's always pronounced that way. But then in some situations, it isn't. So like, I always thought it was Anguilla, but I think it's actually pronounced Anguilla, like the, it's not like a Y sound. I think someone could correct me if I'm wrong about that. Well, I just remember
I mentioned that on a show 2 or 3 weeks ago, and I was corrected on how I pronounce it. So I'm just going to stay quiet on this.
I think is how they say
Anguilla. I'm just staying quiet. I ain't going to try.
Oh, is it Anguilla? Because I thought that's how.
I think so. Because somebody sent us a thing and told us how to pronounce it too. But do you, and that's like when we travel too, because we lived in California for a long, long time. And I still say the I-10.
Oh, yeah.
Living out in California, because, you know, you do the 5, the 805, you know, all that.
Yeah, any rail
so
trip,
we carry that over.
Yeah, I'm taking I-10 over to the store. No, and on the West Coast, it's I'm taking the I-10 or just the 10.
Or the 8, yeah.
Huh. So I'm from Oregon, and we have I-5, and I just always called it I-5, not the I-5. Yeah, so
it must be a California thing, not a West Coast.
Yeah, I guess so. But yeah, it's just like a funny thing. Like, stuff is regional. Although now I really do want to know how to pronounce Anguilla. I'm like, people who live there must pronounce it a certain way. So somebody comment me or voice. You can leave a voice message on the Anchor podcast page and tell me how to pronounce it, because I just want to make sure, you know, that we're doing it properly. It's hard though, because like a lot of the islands in the Caribbean are pronounced differently than maybe like your instinct to pronounce them would be. Dominica is Dominica, but like you might be inclined to pronounce it Dominica if you didn't know otherwise.
How are you supposed to spell St. Martin? That's spelled like 3 different ways, depending on who. So I was like, I'm not sure how to spell it. I know how to say it.
Yeah, or St. Bart's, right? Like sometimes it's with an H, exactly, and sometimes it's not.
Right.
So I guess people could just
tell us that are like that too, because we live near a city called Bernie, but it doesn't look like that.
No, it's Boerne. And then there's a town that looks like Burnett, but it's Burnett. So, yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's the problem, is unless you're from a place, you just don't necessarily know. But hopefully people are forgiving and aren't just like, that's wrong.
Exactly.
So I also wanted to ask you about, you have probably, I'm assuming, been to most of the major Trap Rock Parrothead events. Is that true?
Most, yes.
We've been
to some, we haven't.
Over the past 3 years, we've been to almost every one at least once.
Have you been to Parrot Grande? That's the one we have here in Arizona.
Right. Yeah, that's the reason why I said almost, because of Parrot Grande. That's one we have not been to. But we had talked about going this year, and then our schedule was, you know, amok. And now it's really amok. But that was one that we had talked about trying to get to.
That's just a difficult one because, for example, this summer we're spending in the Midwest and we're able to hit 3, although now it's down to 2 because Summer Chill just canceled today. The West Coast, it's, you know, you got that one event. Well, I mean, there's also Fence of the West, but they're not close enough to each other where you can spend that time. So we have to drive all the way from Texas to, you know, Arizona, and then have to come back. And that is just, it's very costly. So
yeah.
we definitely want to make it at some point, because we've heard nothing but great things about it. And we love our West Coast people, our family with the PH. It's difficult. We did a West Coast tour 2 years ago, and we were able to hit Fence of the West, and then went out to San Diego, then up to Laid Back Attack, and so on and so forth. But hopefully we can make it at some point. It's just this year, it's not working out.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I totally understand. Honestly, like, we don't, our event's pretty small, so we don't get it. Like, sometimes we'll get some people from Vegas or some people from, like, Southern California, but we're not one of the big ones that draw a lot of, like, people from other states. I do think, what's the one San Diego does? Campland? That's usually in September, right? So you could maybe
I think that's their anniversary party or something. And yeah, that's, we haven't been to that one either. Even when we were in San Diego, I think I was
because they had just started doing Campland when we were leaving. They used to do it at that hotel.
Oh, that's right. It was at a Hilton or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Their anniversary party.
Well, and that one would be perfect for you because you just already have your RV. So, like, when I've only been once, but we had to, like, rent an RV as a group because it's, like, at that campground. So, you know, it's not, like, at a hotel with rooms to stay in. So you'd be ready for that.
But, you know, Sheila Jurgensen contacted me one day and she goes, "You're not going to believe this. I walked into Campland by the Bay." I guess she was probably working on the event or whatever. But she just walked in and she goes, "They were playing Radio Trop Rock over the speakers." I'm like, "What? That's awesome."
That is awesome. So you haven't been to quite all of them, but do you have a favorite event? And maybe, I don't know if that's like asking if you have a favorite kid to people, but is there one that's sort of like your, you know, kind of like hometown or just the one that is, you know, the one that you really like going to the
most? Well, I can tell you that every event we've been to is outstanding, each in their own individual way. And we love them all.
Very diplomatic.
Well, see, the thing is like the, obviously Lone Star Luo stands out to us because that's our first broadcast and we've been asked to come back every year.
And it's also the closest to our house. So
it's 45 minutes away.
Yeah.
But like the thing that they're doing at the Surf Ballroom, when they said that was the only time it was going to happen. And when you walk into the Surf Ballroom, it just is a feeling that you cannot describe. But, you know, that one obviously stands out because that was who would have thought Trop Rock could be turned into a 50s thing? You know what I mean? But then like the Ozarks is a really cool event. And then Summer Chill, because each event has something different that you're like, wow, this really stands out. And if you could take one thing from each of those events and make a super event, that would be amazing too.
But one thing you mentioned about Parrot Grind, you're like, well, it's a really small event, you know, but it's still great. Well, some of the smaller events are the ones that actually stand out to me. For example, we went to the New England Parrothead Convention 2 years ago. And, you know, it just the way the camaraderie, because it, you know, there wasn't a bunch of people coming from all over the nation. So it was a very it was an intimate event. It was a great event. We had a fantastic time and hanging out with the artists. I mean, it was still great. It doesn't necessarily have to be a huge blowout event like the big ones like Music on the Bay that's huge. It doesn't necessarily have to be that to be a great event.
I agree. I haven't been to most of them, but I went to Finn's 1 year and it was great. Like, it was fun, but Parrot Grande for me is like way more fun because, like you said, it's a tighter knit group. I know almost everyone at this point, so it's very comfortable. I'm not super comfortable around people I don't know. Like, I have kind of a hard time meeting new people. So being at Finn's where there were just tons of people and tons of people I didn't know, it was still a great event, and you know, the music was great and everything. My club tried to give me a nickname of Sprint after that event because it was like the one time that I, you know, made some bad decisions, but of drinking wise, there was Jello shots involved. That's a whole story. But anyway, like I still had a really good time, but something about Parrot Grande for me is just like really, like, it just feels homey. It's like my people and I know them all and I'm comfortable with them all. And the musicians that come, I mean, we do get a variety, but we usually have the same like core musicians. Like, usually Mark Mulligan's always there. A lot of times Bob Carwin is there. So yeah, I totally understand what you mean. I would be happy to go to Finn's, but if I had to choose, I would always pick Pere Grande over Finn's.
Well, like we talked about earlier, the whole reason we bought this radio station is so we could travel and go to every damn one. So I know not everyone can do that because they have real jobs. So if it were me, what I would do, I'd make a list of every Trop Rock festival in the world and then just make the list and then go down and whatever criteria you want to use, what's the most affordable to attend, and put them in some sort of order, alphabetical, or the ones that you think would be the most fun, and then just start checking them off. It, maybe in 10 to 12 years, maybe you can eventually go to all of them, because I really do believe that everyone should go to every event at least once, because you'll see what we're talking about, where each one has their own little thing that makes them unique, different, and special.
Yeah, I would definitely love to do that. Like I said, it's a little hard for me. It's a little out of my comfort zone to just go to an event where I like don't really know anybody. And so a lot of times, like I've been to Meeting of the Minds a couple of times, but that was with, you know, I go with a few people from my club that I already know. But I'm hoping that maybe through doing this podcast, I will get to know more people around the country. And then I'll sort of already, like now when I go to an event, I'll be like, oh, hey, Eric and Gina, I know them, you know?
Exactly.
And it'll make me feel a little more comfortable doing that. But I definitely would love to visit the other events someday, because they, like you said, I think they all sound great and they all have different things that they do or you know, different things that make them special. So, but speaking of events, I think we don't want to wrap this up without talking a little bit about Meeting of the Minds, just because we're in an interesting situation this year where Meeting of the Minds has just this week been postponed, or I guess canceled for this year, postponed to next year. But I know I wanted to talk to you a little bit about it just because I know that it sounds like a lot of things are still going to be happening, even though the core event, which is at the Casa, has been canceled. A lot of the musicians are still going. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yes. I want to start with saying that I totally understand that the decision that the PHIP board and the Casa Marina came to at that point, because just the liability, the uncertain, the probable financial loss, I get it. And so I'm certainly hold no ill will towards either, you know, the PHIP or the Casa Marina or however, whoever decided. I totally get it. But with that said, I do want to say that there, if you've been to Meeting of the Minds anytime in the past 5, 6, 7 years, you know that there's a lot of stuff that happens outside the Casa. And we are getting word that it's all that stuff's still going to happen. And so people are getting together and trying to figure a way to kind of, I don't want to say organize it because it's already going to happen, but find a way to promote it.
Get the word out.
Get the word out and promote it with a unified voice that this is still going to happen. And by the way, the people that are talking about it, I already know, are also aware that the COVID-19, people are concerned about that. And if you are concerned and you're in a high-risk group, no one's going to, oh, you're not going, you're a wuss or whatever. No, we get it. But there are going to be precautions taken as best as possible to minimize the risk. And it's still going to happen. I mean, as far as there's stuff going on, so if please, please, if you have not canceled your reservation and you have more time to wait until you hear, you know, that this is what's going on, just hold on, give it some time. Some word is going to come out and it's still going to be a fantastic time. And no one's trying to crush PHIP and say, no, it's just a lot of people are going to go anyway. Let's go down and have a good time. And next year when Meeting of the Minds is back, then it's going to be even bigger and better. Let's do this. Let's have a good time while we're down there. It is, do not cancel. We want to see you down there. I've talked to four different radio stations. All the stations are still going. I've talked to, I don't know, probably 60 or 70 artists. Every 100% of every artist I've talked to is going to be there. So it's still going to be happening at a great time.
Plus we have to go down there because that's where our son lives. That's when we get to see him.
Oh.
Oh yeah,
that's cool. I want to live there.
Yeah. No, you don't.
No, because he's a bartender and his husband is a chef, so they've made exactly $0 in the last 6 weeks.
But yeah, luckily, sure. He's married to somebody who's a saver and not a spender, like he is.
That is very important, yes. Especially right now, yes. Especially if you live in Key West.
Yes. Yeah, the service industry is totally shut down.
And from what it is looking like right now, because, you know, we talked about the TRMA Artist Relief Foundation, another reason why that the group is wanting to kind of organize it is because they, you know, the PHIP and Meeting of the Minds has always been huge and made a lot of money for charity. And without a Meeting of the Minds, those charities are going to suffer. So the reason it needs to be organized is because there will still be a way to help charities out, not that just TRMA Artist Relief Foundation, but other charities. And so all that's trying to be figured out right now of you know, how it's going to be organized and the charities are going to be brought in and also the sponsors are going to be brought in, because without the sponsors, the charities aren't going to get the money. So it's in the works, and I don't know what else to say other than don't give up.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's really good to know, especially about the charities thing, because I know, you know, the sort of the bigger event at the CASA is usually kind of the main framework for the charity related stuff. And then a lot of the musicians play, you know, in various places around town. And, but that's good to know that the charity aspect of it is still, hopefully will still be maintained. I think that will make a difference for some people, or at least, you know, be important to have as a factor in. I know, I mean, I'm personally in the situation of I was planning to go to Meeting of the Minds, but I am actually in an at-risk health, immunocompromised health group. So I'm still, I honestly was like, I don't really know what it's going to be like. Like, I had my tickets and my, you know, airline ticket and everything before all of this happened even. So I was kind of at the point where I was like, well, am I going to have to not go eventually anyway, because of, I don't know what it's going to be like at that point. So, yeah. So I'm still trying to decide if I can take the risk to make it down there. But I definitely think, you know, if it's great to have the options of like, there's still things happening, you know, as long as, you know, we don't really know what's going to happen, but to the best of our ability, planning for what could possibly still be a great time, still support charities. You know, hopefully things will be amenable to that at that point in time. We don't really know. So I appreciate that, you know, people are still trying to have something going on and make it happen. I know for the musicians too, because like that's a big earner for them, and to raise money for charity. So I really appreciate that people are still trying to have those options open. And I'm sure like this is all developed very quickly, like this week. So I'm sure there will be much more coming out about this and what's going on with it. So if I don't know if there's a best place to follow that kind of information, or will you just be posting updates kind of on like your social media, or what's the best way for people to keep up on?
Radio Trap Rock is certainly not in charge of any of that, but we are up with the news. So you can visit us on Facebook, Radio Trap Rock, all one word, and we're going to keep you in the loop of what is going to be going on. And I really do want to stress the fact that we are the group that is doing that is very concerned about the COVID-19. In fact, some of the shows that do take place outside of the CASA during that week that want to still continue are trying to find a way to do them in an outdoor environment where people can spread out bigger. So that's really what is being worked on right now, is that type of stuff. Is they want to make sure that they are within, even if the state says, oh, you're good, 100%, pack them in. I don't think that needs to happen. They're going to try when possible. Of course, no one's going to go into Willie T's and tell them how to control their business.
Right.
But if it's an event held by some type of organization, this organization does have control, and they're going to say, okay, we're going to have an outdoor environment, and we're only going to have this many chairs or whatever.
Okay. Well, that's really good to know. Before we wrap up, I just have one more question that we got from when I asked for questions from listeners or audience members, that kind of thing. And it's from Tamara Alsop, who's like one of my favorite peeps here in Tucson. She and her husband, Russ, are kind of our main house concert venue here. So she wanted to know regarding house concerts, do you have any advice on how people should get that going again? when it's sort of starting to look better and a little safe, to encourage people to come to the show or feel okay about coming to those, to the house concerts.
Well, as long as they do it outdoors, obviously, then people are kind of moving forward, because we've got some friends that have already kind of put out there that they're going to start theirs. They're no longer going to have it where they're going to do like the buffet style thing where everybody brings a dish. They're basically telling people, bring your own chair, bring whatever you want to eat and drink, and then we're going to all sit together, but not together, and bring the live music back in, because that's a concern. You know, obviously, you're bringing something from home. Everybody's got all laid out. You're going through a buffet line and all that kind of stuff. And maybe it would be a lot safer not to go that route. But they're still wanting to have it, maybe not as have as many people, you know, say, we want to limit it to 30 people. Or if you've got a huge backyard, maybe you can fit 60 people, where you have people that are, you know, always together, like Eric and I, sit together, and maybe another group. You know what I mean?
Right. And if you have to limit the number of people, pre-sell tickets, or because you don't want, you know, 60 people showing up for a 30 person show and, you know, you're going to make 30 people mad.
Right.
But the house concerts are so important to the genre, just because it's so, I'm not going to say it's unique to the genre, but it kind of is, the way it's done in a family environment and people, you know, if it's, so I think you just got to find your normal people that show up will tell you what they think and just follow what they say. Just like we say, our assistant program directors and blah, blah, blah. Same thing. Just ask within the people that normally show up and they're going to tell you what needs to be done.
And there's still a lot of artists that are traveling too. So if they're, cause I noticed, I saw, I think on her deal where they're like, you know, send some people up here. There are people, and there's a network, you know, obviously the House Concert Central does it. I think John Burns has a list. We try to get together a list of where they're kind of traveling to see who wants to be up in that area, especially if they have a chain reaction. You know, if there's somebody within a, you know, 2 or 3 hour drive where they can get from one to the other, so they kind of can get back out there, because they're missing the people, just like the people are missing the artist.
Well, I think that's one of the things too. She also added, send more East Coasters our way.
Right.
But it, like you said, like when you were talking about going to trap rock events, you know, Arizona is kind of hard unless you have a few shows or you're really sort of on the way to California, especially for people from the East Coast. It's not easy or cheap to get out here. So, I mean, we would love to see more musicians coming this way, obviously, but in this time, especially if you are having to limit how many people can be at a show, you know, usually we say, okay, like suggest a donation of $20 per person. But if we're having to limit how many people are like at the house concert, that might sort of put a limit on how much money the artist makes. So do you think artists are more willing to be flexible right now? Or do you think it would be more like, oh, well, there's less people, but maybe we need to up the suggested donation amount? Or what do you think about that?
Well, see, that's going to actually need to come from the artist standpoint, because you may have an artist that, you know, he can buy an airline ticket and get, or she can buy an airline ticket to get there for a little bit less. Whereas if you have an artist that strictly travels, you know, in an RV, you know, like us or the Brewers, or when Corey Young used to do that as well, where it may cost a little more for those people to get there. So I think it all depends on who you're wanting, because you know, it may be cheap, because I think right now you can buy a ticket from California to into Key West for $500. So I think it all depends on what the artist can do, whether or not they can go, I can only come out if I can make XYZ dollars, whereas somebody else may say, no, I can come for, you know, this. You know, I think it just depends on who it is. But just because you think they might charge more, I think it needs to be brought up to them individually. And that's the one thing that's good, or not one thing, but one of the things that is good about the Trop Rock artist is you can contact them directly and go, would you do this? Whereas if you had a manager, they're going to go, no, he won't pay for less than, you know, $1,000. Whereas maybe that artist that you're connected with may go, yeah, that's doable. We can do that because we wanted to go see our family that lives in Arizona. Because you don't know where everybody's really from. Right. You know, they might incorporate it in with something else.
So probably just, so there's no reason not to still reach out to musicians right now just to see like, hey, this is what we can do. You know, would you be interested? And then if for some reason that doesn't work for them, they can always just say, oh no, I can't really make that work right now. But there's no reason even like during this time to not still sort of just try to reach out and ask them individually.
Right. Exactly. And that's like, Aaron Schurz, he lives in Nashville. So they're thinking, oh, well, he'll never come to Dallas. Well, his dad lives in Dallas. His mom lives in San Antonio. So then they're like, okay, he'll come out here because he's got family out here and maybe he wants to go see his dad or mom, you know?
Yeah. I think he actually was one of the concerts we had lined up for here. I want to say maybe even the next one in June. So I'm not sure if that's still going to happen, but it is actually, we do seem to be starting to get more new people willing to come out here that maybe we haven't had at house concerts before. So that's really exciting. And hopefully once things continue to get better, if they do continue to get better, and hopefully they will, and you know, people are more free to move around again or feel more comfortable going places, we can start to get more of those musicians. Because I, like you said, I think the house concert thing, and I've said this on so many episodes, so hopefully the listeners will forgive me for reiterating again, but like the house concerts thing is one of, I think, the best things about this music community. It's one of my favorite things to be able to just go to someone's house that you know, hang out in their backyard, see a musician play like in such an intimate setting, you know, meet the musician, get to know them. If they come a few times, like you kind of just become friends with them, or like you know, some of them do sort of special events and trips on there that they kind of host and you really get to know them that way. I think that's something that you just, like you said, not that no one else has house concerts, but the prevalence of that, you just don't really see in other communities. And I think it's one of the things that makes the Trap Rock community really special. So hopefully we can start to get back to that as safely as possible.
Right.
Well, you know, another thing about house concerts, if you have a certain artist you want, then yeah, contact them directly. But maybe you just have a date you need to fill, or you want to fill, but you're not sure who you want. If you contact us, we are no longer in the booking business, so to speak, but we'll be happy, you know, to say, hey, the Smuckettellis in Phoenix are looking for, you know, somebody at this time, and we can send it out to our database and then let them contact that person directly and, you know, work a deal or whatever. So, because I know some people, you know, maybe don't know exactly what they want or how to contact who they want. So yeah, just contact us and we will help, and then at least get you guys in touch, and then you guys work the deal out.
Okay. That's really great to know. And I think, I know John Burns had also offered, to kind of do that.
Yeah. He's
a little bit too. He knows a lot of people. So
yeah.
Yes.
All right.
And great. Because he'll go, do you have so-and-so's phone number? And we kind of like trade out stuff if we don't know, you know, kind of deal. So we've worked with him quite a bit, and because I was helping him too with the Aaron Schur stuff, you know, just trying to get him on his trek to get wherever he wanted to go. So
yeah, that is, I think one of the other really nice things about the Trap Rock community is like everybody is friends with everybody and everybody's super supportive. You know, there's not a lot of real like competition feel or like infighting kind of, and you get, I think, in a lot of communities. The Trap Rock community is just so supportive and friendly. Everybody, I mean, I'm sure there's exceptions, but like generally speaking, everybody seems like they're friends with everybody else and works together.
That's absolutely true. Even within the radio industry for Trap Rock, you know, like we'll run into a problem with licensing or a server or whatever. And, you know, we'll reach out to Sam Densler or Danny Lynn or whatever and say, hey, you know, I'm having this problem. Have you had this before? Can you help me? And like when we first bought the station and needed to switch over to another server because the server we had was terrible, you know, we contacted Harry Tieford with Radio A1A, who we did some work with before that. And he's like, yeah, this is what I use and everything. And so we all kind of worked together to because it's all about the genre and the music and fun. It's no one's making money off of a lot of money. I mean, we're not getting rich off of this. Let's just right. work together and at least have fun, because that's really the wealth of this industry is the wealth of fun that we have with it. So let's just have fun together, and not if you're competing, you're doing it the wrong way.
Yeah, I think that's so great. And on that note, I actually, before we go, I just want to give you a chance to share. I know you mentioned your Facebook page. If you want to mention your website again or any other social media where people can find you, do you want to do that?
Yeah, you can check us out at radiotroprock.com. That's where you'll see our tour schedule, which is the events that we're attending in the future. You can listen to us. The easiest way, it can't get easier than this. Alexa, play Radio Trop Rock on TuneIn. Boom, she's going to play it. Oh, now here, see what I just did? And obviously we're available on TuneIn. We're available on Streama. And we also have free applications, iOS and Google apps or Android apps. And our Facebook page, when you look at for us on Facebook, go Radio Trop Rock, all one word. Because if it's three separate words, there was a radio show years ago, and I think they still have their Facebook page. So,
Okay. And I just used the app for the first time on my phone. I was painting a fence yesterday and listening to you on the app, and that was really helpful. So that's a really cool feature, too.
Yeah.
And you can also request songs on there, too.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, you look in the menu, and it'll come to us by email. And well, the reason it's funny. I was talking to Sam Densler, Songwriters Island Radio, about there is a way to set up requests where the people request it and it will play the song, and there's no person that has to go to program it to play. And he goes, somebody contacted me. He's like, why is your station playing blah, blah, blah song like every 30 minutes? It's or even more, like three times an hour. And he's like, I don't know. So he looked, and it's because somebody was requesting the song over and over and over. He goes, I had to change that shit. I was like, so when you send a request into us, and now Sam, it'll be a person that has to see that request and then program it in. So sometimes I'm pretty up on it. It's pretty quick. We get it on. But sometimes if I go to bed at 8:30, like last night, we had a request at like 8:40. And I was like, oops, sorry, I went to bed at 8:30. So anyway, yeah, that's a way to request a song. It comes to us by email.
Right. So you can request a song. You might not hear it, but it'll be played eventually. What do you say?
Most of the time it's
because I, if I have a laptop near me, we'll be at a bar. And if I have the laptop with me, which happens, I was like, oh, we got a request, and I'll go on and do it. So, yeah.
Unless it's something that's not in our genre, because we're not going to play Minute Work.
Yeah, right. It has to be something that's on the station. That
no Sam Hunt either.
Yes, we are.
Right. And no Wagon Wheel.
No Wagon Wheel.
Okay, well, thank you guys so much for being on. It was really a pleasure to talk to you and also to meet you. And hopefully I will get to meet you in person someday down the line at some event.
One thing I should have said when you asked us how we, ended up with the radio station, I should have said just this. Blame it on Buffett.
That's right. Blame it on Buffett. Right. Thanks so much, you guys.
Thank you.
All right. Well, that was once again Eric and Gina Babin from Radio Trop Rock. It was a pleasure talking to them. I'm happy to have them on anytime. Hopefully get to meet them sometime down the line in the future in person. It's kind of exciting doing this show right now, even though all the episodes are distance because of people, not going places, staying home because of COVID-19 and all of that. But it's kind of exciting to sort of build relationships that way. It's a little easier for me, a little more low pressure, I guess, to meet people sort of online versus in person the first time. So it's kind of a fun way for me to meet some new people, talk to people, kind of, get to know them in this setting. And then someday down the road, I know I'll probably be meeting a lot of these people in person if I haven't already, going to events and that kind of thing. So it was great to get to talk to them now. And they weren't, I hadn't met them before really. So I will look forward to at a future event, maybe Meeting of the Minds, or what that is going to look like, maybe something else, we'll see, depending on what happens. But I hope that you enjoyed that interview. It's really nice to have a variety of people on. Like I said, like I love interviewing musicians and I'm happy to do that all day long, but it's kind of fun to get other people's perspectives as well. Especially, you know, other people in the music business, as it were, without being, you know, actual musicians. So I hope you will go, if you haven't listened to Radio Trap Rock before, I hope you go and check that out. It's really worth a listen to. And, you know, I think, like we talked about, there's a ton of other Trap Rock radio stations out there as well. And, you know, everybody kind of just supports everybody else. So it's not like a competitive thing. So definitely, you know, listen to Radio Trap Rock for sure. But if you want to get out there and see what other stations are out there too, go and do that. I would be happy to interview any of the other ones sometime in the future. If you have anyone else that you think you would like to hear as a guest, please let me know. If for some reason you're listening to this and you know, want to be a guest, if you're a parrot head and you have something you want to talk about, or, you know, if you are a musician or if you run a Trap Rock radio station, really anything, you know, reach out to me. You can contact me at, blameitonbuffettpodcast@gmail.com. Or if you want to message me on Facebook, you can do that. Just go to, Blame It on Buffett. If you search that on Facebook, it should come up. Please like my page if you are enjoying the podcast. If you're new, if you're just listening to this because maybe you heard me over on Radio Trap Rock and then came to check out the podcast, because of that, thank you so much. I really appreciate you giving it a shot. I hope that there was something here that you found enjoyable. And thanks to everyone who are regular listeners. I really appreciate that. if you want to follow me other places, I'm at Blame Buffett Pod on Twitter and Instagram. And I think that's generally all of the places you can find me. You can listen on Anchor or, you know, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Pod, like basically all the podcast places, which I'm sure you figured out if you're listening to this right now. But if you are listening on Apple or another platform where you can leave a review or a rating or that kind of thing, please do that if you are liking the content, because it really helps me sort of get an idea of if people are liking it and engagement, that kind of thing. So yeah, please let me know if you have any thoughts. I think that's going to be it for this week. I feel like during the earlier part of the pod, like when I first started, the interviews were maybe a little shorter. And so I felt like I kind of needed to maybe talk a little bit more to kind of round out the podcast a little bit. And now, you know, the interviews are pretty much always an hour or longer. So I'm not going to really do a lot of extra talking, probably that's just me. But if you do have any questions for me, please send them to me and I'll be happy to answer them on the podcast. I can always talk, you know, if there are things that we want to discuss or you want to hear about that are separate from whoever the guest is that week, that's totally fine. And I can always do a little bit of extra talking, but I sort of figure that people really come for the guests mostly. So I probably won't do too much yakking in addition to the interviews, unless the interview is like pretty short or there's a topic that you want to hear about or something that I really want to talk about. This week, of course, the big news is that Meeting of the Minds is postponed or, you know, canceled until next year. But I feel like that was covered pretty thoroughly in the actual interview. So I don't feel like I need to say much more about that, except that, you know, please be safe and make good decisions and safe decisions. We want all of our Parrothead friends, Trap Rock friends, everybody to, you know, be able to come back to things when things start happening again. So, you know, definitely make the choices that are best for you. And we will see you next time, I believe, and in the immortal words of Captain Ron, if anything's going to happen, it's going to happen out there.
Blame it on Buffett. He was my hero.